Are you listening?
It's Anything and Everything with Mel.
Damn.
Yeah. Thanks for listening to Anything and Everything with Matt. Today I'm here with Kevin and Kane Stahowski.
Hello.
How's it going, everyone?
How's it going?
So today we're going to just chat about whatever, right? Whatever comes to our mind.
Pretty much.
Kane told me that his uncle was very big into conspiracies and just a lot of history buff and all this other good stuff. So figured I'd pick his brain here today. So he tells me that you are into ancient aliens, huh? What's your idea behind that?
I kind of subscribe to the ancient alien theory.
Yeah?
Yes, correct.
So do you think, like, see, that's something that, like, I used to love those shows. I haven't watched them in maybe like a year or two, but I grew up watching those things. I used to love them, and
I have them all saved on my DVR.
Really?
Yeah.
See, I heard.
I watched all the seasons, all the little spin-offs with Giorgio Tsoulakis.
Oh yeah, yeah.
That, you know?
The guy with the aliens guy. I ain't saying it's aliens, but it's aliens.
With the over-bronzed face in the early years, but then, you know, he changed it. I just make fun of on South Park and stuff like that.
Yeah. He's everything, like, that guy's one.
They'd show him, like, you know, where he was, like, African looking.
I got a shirt with him on it that says aliens. It's him and his crazy hair.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Zeitgeist, too. You had copies of that.
Zeitgeist is a good series, too. So, Ancient Aliens. I used to be into it until I heard this podcast. A couple of these podcasts really changed my mind about it completely. There were the Joe Rogan podcast. He had on two people in specific, Graham Hancock and a guy named Randall Carlson. Graham Hancock is like an anthropologist. He studies,
I know Graham Hancock.
Yeah, he studies like ancient cultures and stuff like
gods.
That. Mm-hmm. Fingerprints of the Gods, yeah. And then Randall Carlson is an ancient catastrophe expert. He's a catastrophism expert.
He studies. Was he presented on Ancient Aliens?
No. And he's a mathematician and a mason. So
okay.
He's basically like a. He speaks the language of the universe, and he's a geologist, so he knows how to, like, you know, geography and understands Earth, and he studies catastrophism, so basically ancient catastrophes that have came and wiped out, you know, the dinosaurs and put us in the ice age.
They talk about where they found sudden spurts of fossilized remains on the shores of certain coastal lands, where...
What kind of fossilized?
Massive graveyards of dinosaur and other reptilian creatures that were just suddenly swept up in a like swift current stream and smashed against the bedrock at the coastal lands and were fossilized and preserved. That's where they had the theory that came about that something swift and catastrophic had happened in the past history of our weather's history.
Mm-hmm. See, there's actually evidence in Siberia of these massive extinction mammoth grave sites where these mammoths are... The fossils that they found with these mammoths have frozen. They have frozen.
I read about that research.
Herbs and like grass. And
that's that adds to the theory along with the coastal land research I had mentioned. Yes,
it's like evidence, and their like hind legs are all their hips and hind legs are shattered and broken.
Well,
like
they were so flash frozen that I think they were even able to extract DNA.
Because the food in their stomach didn't have time to digest.
Yes,
and it was
that I did
matter.
Read. Yes.
So if they were eating plant matter in a dry in a warmer area, and then
and all of a sudden got flash frozen,
about,
which
like,
they couldn't explain any yes by normal environmental you know science conditions.
So
that goes along with it.
So there's evidence all over that there's you know signs of an ancient catastrophe that's happened, and recently as what thrown us into our last ice age. And that's what kind of...
13,000 years ago.
Yeah, and that's what wiped out the last, you know, 95% of mammals that was on the planet. That the last Pleistocene era with the mammoths and
I believe the one that hit the dinosaurs wiped out more...
Well, yeah, that one was way long ago, though. But
correct,
then the mammals
correct.
Came
in
out...
In recent history, yes.
Yeah, so...
The flood was probably the... Yes, absolutely.
So instead of the idea that it was aliens that did that... It makes more sense, when I heard these podcasts, it makes way more sense that we used to be very smart, and that we were wiped out and kind of had to restart civilization.
This kind of goes into the field of if you subscribe to ancient Atlantis history, Atlantean history. Atlantis was the powerful civilization that most esoteric writings point to the fact that the Great Flood was not caused by a natural catastrophe. It wasn't.
I think there is evidence in the Yucatan, right, of an ancient like meteor impact about 12,000 years ago.
They say it was man-made. Some say semi-natural, where like it was a combination of both forces.
Okay.
The theory that, well, if we can sit and ponder about the powers that may have been possessed by the people that were at the times of Atlantis. There are a lot of esoteric writings from the sleeping prophet Edgar Cayce, who talked about the times of Atlantis and the technology that they possessed. And one of his central themes was that the female power at the time, Atlantis, was a matriarchal civilization. The females did have the power. They were entrusted with all the decisions to when they should go to war, all the important decisions among society. And it was purported that they allowed that because females have that higher intuitive connection to their female side of their brain, more emotional and compassionate in their decision making. And that's why females were entrusted with that. Can't name the researcher right now that wrote a book, but all pre-flood language was symbology-based, no alphabet, which deals with the female side of the brain. Symbology is very heavy on the female side of the brain. And he wrote that when the Sumerian civilization, all that popped up on the scene, yes, the Chinese and the Sumerians were using characters similar to symbology, but it was still kind of being geared and motivated towards an alphabet-based language. Alphabet-based being more logic, dealing with the male side. He explained that the transition from Atlantis, the matriarchal society, to the patriarchal society of Judeo-Christianism, early Sumerian, all of that was male-based and male-dominated and oriented.
Mm-hmm. So where does this bring in the ancient aliens and or ancient man instead?
Atlantis, they theorized, was half god, half, if you want to say god, but half extraterrestrial,
okay.
DNA,
okay.
Half homo sapien, living amongst us with regular homo sapiens. But the females had the power. They would concentrate their consciousness in the temples, which would create very earth-shattering, profound effects. Which is when they theorized that when they got subjected to corruption, that's what caused the fall of Atlantis. There's some esoteric texts that say, like, the laser program that they started in the 80s, the Star Wars program, was actually a continuation of the ET aliens that still influence humanity to this day, and that they were doing in the times of Atlantis. But the times of Atlantis, I believe, they were coexisting. A lot of the evidence points to that.
So you're saying that there were some extraterrestrials that coexisted with us in ancient times?
Well, yes.
Knowledge and know.
I believe that extraterrestrial aliens did genetically engineer us just because of the DNA evidence. The DNA evidence is pretty profound. It's pretty tremendous, too. 97% of our DNA is similar to Homo Neanderthalus, which is our closest ancestor next to Homo erectus.
Okay.
And Homo Neanderthalus having 97% of our DNA similar, but 3% being completely different. There is no precedent for that on the anthropological record. That's what makes it so mysterious, is that there's no other mammals that really display that kind of jump in such a short period of time.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I agree that throughout history, there is our brains doubled in size, and we became what we are now. We were monkeys. You're saying
Homo Neanderthalus actually had a bigger brain than we did? And actually, what was really weird is that you would think that there would be higher intelligence within that group, which there wasn't. All evidence points towards that. But when Homo sapiens were created, our brain was shortened but became more intelligent. Now, how do you explain that evolution step? That's like a big conundrum.
When it comes to evolution, I definitely would, I guess, lean towards the idea, if I wanted to believe in evolution, it would definitely be the idea that the stoned ape theory makes most sense to me. The idea, if we did come from monkeys and what did make that giant leap, because I wrote a persuasive speech on this about how what really did create human consciousness. Is it there's people who believe, scientists will believe, that it was the invention of the throwing arm and just the change of the monkey's diet that doubled our brain and created, you know, is what's making us create iPhones, right? And some believe that, you know, it was the intervention of God or aliens that may have tampered with monkey DNA and made us, you know, better or more human-like. But the most sense, if you want to believe in evolution and not just, you know, eating meat, monkeys just changing a little bit of diet, it's the idea that they started taking these psychoactive mushrooms that would have made sense because they would have ran into this mushroom. If the forest
absolutely
were, if
with
the monkeys
with
were
the type
spreading,
of diet that they subsisted on,
exactly.
They absolutely would. And that was Terrence McKenna's point too.
Exactly. So it makes the most sense because microdosing levels, small levels, when you're ingesting those as an ape, it would not only increase curiosity and make you curious. So maybe even originally discovering the throwing arm, but it would also makes you horny, so you would reproduce more than other groups of monkeys.
Yes.
And it also
be aphrodisiac, yes.
Mm-hmm, and it also increases your visual acuity, so it makes you see better in your environment. 100%
I agree on that.
You're a better hunter.
Terrence McKenna
survive more and spread your DNA more as in ingesting those, you know, mushrooms.
I believe Terrence McKenna's main argument for the language theory was that the theory was that psilocybin worked in certain areas of the brain that were responsible for language.
They do, and imagery. And,
yes.
And those are key parts,
yes,
of those things,
yes,
for sure. And imagination. And all of those things are key parts of what makes us human.
Agreed.
All of them.
Agreed. But.
And the fact that it was.
But to offer a side note,
mm-hmm,
DNA. Our DNA and the chemical components that work within it, they actually have a coding and. Process to, like, the process by which they work.
Okay.
They have a
code.
It has a syntax to it, just like our human language. And the theory is that anything that DNA, which is our central core of all of our biological matter and material, and the code that's like transferred to new biological cells,
mm-hmm,
that having the trait of a syntax just like our human language, even in Latin, Sanskrit, everything has a syntax,
mm-hmm,
that DNA actually mimics,
yeah,
or is it the other way around? Our human language is mimicking our DNA, which is our base information site that we gather all of our information from to replicate cells and everything and so on and so forth.
So you're saying, like, kind of like how epigenetics, like how we learn from our ancestors and how we, is that what you're talking about? Traits are passed on and stuff? It's almost coded?
That can be, they are theorizing that is being coded into the light of DNA. DNA is a light sensitive source. It emits biophotons and absorbs biophotons. And the fact that light actually can contain information, because that's how all of our current computer technology is based on,
mm-hmm,
that lends a lot of credence to it.
Okay, so you're saying it's run by light? The more that you talk about this, the more I'm thinking that, fuck it, we're just in a simulation.
There are
because I mean that's why
and,
I'm
well,
so agnostic
and,
because you
well,
can't really.
Well, okay, esoteric texts actually try to explain this. Everything that in our physical environment, yes, it does have physical 3D density because of the vibrational frequency of this universe that we're on. Our
like
pixels
in a computer or on
but,
a TV.
Well, the human mind is a lot more powerful than we give it credence to. Anything that we can imagine and put our total intense passion and thought towards, we can actually manifest. We were actually, esoteric writers talk about how we were able, actually, we did possess this power before the fall of Atlantis and all of these things.
Yeah, in a sense. Well, they do say the power of belief, you know, can have a
intention,
effect.
The power of intention.
Yeah, yeah. Well, that's almost the empower. See, now, intention, I think the best way to describe intention is not just focusing on something so much that it will happen, but you're focusing on something so much and trying to believe that will happen so much that if there's our parallel,
if it happened, if you want, I believe and this is like goes in accordance with Jesus' teachings. If you the power and the passion and faith of one person, and you saw somebody dying of cancer, just very sad, and they actually were convinced and believed that you could heal them through,
mm-hmm,
your intention and mind alone,
yeah,
almost like psychic healers do and faith healers do,
yeah.
But the texts say it's important that both parties that are participating in this ritual have to believe mm-hmm. in each other. Mm-hmm. And there have been a lot of documented miracles where these things have happened.
Well, see, I think that's also, well, when it comes to medical stuff.
And how do you explain that, it being a very science logic based type of research society that we are?
I think when it comes to medical stuff, that would be called the placebo effect, and that's different than creating reality. I think when you think about a universe that you want so bad, like if you want to be rich so bad and be famous so bad, you focus on that reality where you're famous. You focus so hard on that reality. If you want to believe in the multiverse, that there's infinite, every choice you make is another reality created, right? If you focus on the reality that you want so bad, it will make it easier to get there. You still got to do a lot. You can't just sit there and
absolutely.
Do nothing.
Absolutely.
But if all the other
it
ones
will clear the path, though.
It will create a ton.
It will just like magically come to you. And
exactly.
I think that's the effect that people expect when they try to practice that stuff. And that's why that's hogwash and all right away. No, it's about intention. Just being aware that your intention can subtly influence the environment around you. Maybe not drastically, but subtly.
No, I think that's
influence
the
environment around you. And that's where the illusion comes in. Yeah, absolutely.
Well, that's the illusion that people think they can.
I think because we are
reality.
So time-based oriented mammals, we expect instantaneous reaction or is results.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what messes us up.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah,
Patience.
It is. It truly is. And I think when it comes to the placebo effect, the power of belief does have an effect, because all these chemicals, every drug that we have that works on us, every drug that we call a drug, is the only reason why we call it a drug is because there are receptors for it in our brains, and our brains...
Correct, where we can correctly identify. Yes, I agree with that, because that's the scientific...
So the reason why aspirin works on us is because there are receptors for aspirin, in a sense, in our brains for it, right? And that's why that works.
Mm-hmm.
So it's not because we've evolved taking aspirin for thousands of years. It's because our brains can already produce aspirin in-house. We just have to... In a sense, that's what placebo is. It's tricking our brains into producing these chemicals that heal us. And we don't know how to do it yet, but I think monks knew how to do it. I think people who have full control and capability of their mind can access these types of highs or chemical rushes or healing capabilities. I think that's the trickery behind placebo, if that makes sense.
It does.
It's these chemicals our brains can already produce. That's why drugs
absolutely.
Work on our brain
absolutely.
Like that.
And I think some human individuals are more they're more keen to be able to access those.
Mm-hmm, for sure.
Versus other ones.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's like the biggest limitation, barrier to that happening.
Yeah.
And with that being said, psychedelic drugs actually... they have a different mechanism on the brain receptors, which is drastically different from other contemporary drugs. And I believe there's one, I can't think of his name right now, he's a Serbian researcher out of Serbia, you'll find him on Bibliotheca Pleiades. And he talks about the gearing mechanism between brain cells, presynaptic neurons, postsynaptic neurons, things of that nature.
Okay.
Whereas electrical energy in the brain is converted to biochemical energy, neurotransmitters are exuded, retaken up into these neurons.
So dumb it down for me a little bit. Dumb it down for me.
Okay. Psychedelic drugs have a way of amplifying these certain traits of these neurons, where suddenly they will exude a lot more neurotransmitters.
Okay.
And not hold back. Other ones will hold back. And they believe that that's what contributes to the hallucinations and the effects that, you see and have.
Mm-hmm.
His theory, though, was that the brain was actually being, using more electrical energy under the influence of psychedelic drugs, that it was using more audio and visual receptors. So actually, a lot more electrical energy was being recorded, which is what they record when they're trying to test like how much of our brain that we use, and they only say like 8 or 9%.
So it's like turning up the electricity in your brain.
Under psychedelic drugs, can be as high as 18 to 32% that you're using more of your brain, electrical energy wise, audio and visual receptors. And the theory behind that was that psychedelic drugs could actually ready us for the ascension or for the shift into fifth dimension, fourth dimension, whatever the esoteric texts want to call it. And psychedelic drugs seem to actually be a pathway, because the Mayans, the South American Indians, they all subscribed to those kind of entheogenic substances that their religion was based on.
What is entheogenic?
Entheogenic substances, living substances that have, I believe, psychedelic traits about them.
Okay.
Don't quote me on that, though. I'll have to look that up.
She was saying almost like like a conscious substances.
Consciousness expanding drugs.
Okay.
Entheogenic. I know Terrence McKenna was like kind of considered an entheogenic researcher.
Okay.
You know,
gotcha.
Entheogens.
Gotcha.
Which I can look up right now. But because of psychedelic drugs' ability to increase the brain's potential power, it was theorized that we were in closer coexistence with the astral realms and the spiritual realms. Which you really can't shy away from that theory, because if you look at the early pagan worshippers, the early shamanic systems of South America, even Russia, the Urals, even in Europe, a lot of them are based on natural entheogenic substances that they can consume to experience their religious vision. Hmm. Peyote, iboga, all different kinds of compounds.
Ayahuasca.
And DMT, even in Africa and South America. And I believe that when you are in higher connection with these certain receptors in your brain, you're also in higher connection with the spiritual and unseen realm by our normal five senses. And that was the point of this guy in this researcher's name. And he had never, and the crazy thing was, is this guy had never ingested psychedelic drugs. And he could even believe from a metaphysical and chemical standpoint how these drugs could do this and how they could achieve this biochemically within the brain.
Mm-hmm.
Which really, like, astounded me that he proved that, the physics of it and everything.
It keeps bringing me back to think that it's either, like, just a... Either we are creating this reality, and that kind of drug tampers with our reality input, almost like it messes with the channels on the TV station, if that makes sense.
They say there's a fourth astral dimension that coexists along with ours, and that's where our imagination takes off. They call it Scotland, the land of fairies, because there was much folklore about people that lived in the country of Scotland that would see in certain like areas of the forest, they would see fairies, little fairies dancing. And they had a lot of folklore
Tripping?
Huh?
Were they tripping?
That has never been mentioned. They could have been drunk, you know. I mean, they're a drinking culture. But, There's just a lot of folklore and stories that were written, and they say even the imagination can be influenced by the fourth dimension, astrally, which coexists right along with ours. They say that when we're asleep dreaming, we are running around the fourth astral dimension.
Hmm.
So if we can make anything that we think, our biggest fears and everything, come to life in our dreams, that makes me think that a fourth dimension is astrally based, that is molded by our intentions and our thought and our consciousness. And I've had three near-death experiences, two of them drug-induced, one of them accident-induced.
Damn.
And I will tell you what, the accident-induced one was about the same as the drug-induced one, which is what really, like, shocked me. That these drugs are not just hallucinations you're seeing on your mind, you're actually probably seeing the astral realms, the astral energy, vibrations and waves as you see them, even though you're seeing things melting against the backdrop and all that. Maybe it's the actual energy waves that you're actually seeing flowing and emanating throughout the physical ether. And that was this guy's argument, that psychedelic drugs, you're stripping your five senses to be able to see other things that you normally wouldn't be able to see. So they're not just pure hallucinations. They're actually emanations and physiological structures that you could never view before.
Interesting.
Yeah.
So they always exist, we just can't see them there.
Absolutely. And they coexist with us every day, and we just don't know it because we're stripped by our five senses.
So it's a reality layer.
Which would explain, this is what explains ghosts to me. Ghosts and paranormal psychology research, the esoteric texts even kind of confirm this, that when you're in the fourth or fifth dimensions, you're in a higher vibrational frequency. And the higher vibrational frequency is ether-like. But ghosts because there is that transition point in between, ghosts that sometimes don't know that they're existing in that realm, don't think they're dead. There's a lot of ghost sightings that happen that way. But ghosts actually have the will to solidify themselves where you can see them within our five senses. You see like a ghostly figure appear.
Yeah.
Okay.
So what is that? The ghost taking for DMT?
He is actually lowering his vibrational frequency to be able to be seen by our three-dimensional perception.
So for the ghost to do that, does he have to take mushrooms, do you think?
No, the ghost is already an etheric experience where he's not biologically based. So when he lowers his vibrational frequency to be seen by the human that's on this earth, yes, that could explain why the higher vibrational frequency in the higher realms coexists with ours, but we can't see it all the time. He can lower himself, or if we're on psychedelic drugs, we can see him in his natural state without him lowering himself. That's where a lot of people think their hallucinations come in. They say, I see ghosts everywhere, while normal sober people can't. Because they have raised their brain to a higher vibrational frequency level, where astrally now they can see these spirits when they couldn't before, under the influence of psychedelic drugs. That's why shamans had religious visions. That's why they were able to communicate spiritually. It's because psychedelic drugs were a potentiator for the brains to communicate with the astral and spiritual realms.
Interesting.
I highly believe in that, just from the experiences and near-death experiences I've had alone. DMT being the strongest.
Have you ever heard of quantum immortality? The theory that our consciousness never really dies, and that we exist in the reality that we are alive in, and that if we die in one reality, our consciousness will exist in the reality where we didn't die. So you may die in my reality and may die off, but you will...
Parallel
you
worlds.
You will exist in the reality where that didn't
parallel
happen.
Parallel timelines, parallel worlds.
Yeah.
It's absolutely, extremely possible. Extremely possible. Absolutely.
It makes sense, but...
Which I think because of that fact and being able to grasp that concept, in fact, while you're under the influence of DMT or other psychedelic substances... You're actually able to grasp the concept of infinity more. Because infinity would involve everything, you know, never ending, correct?
Yeah.
But if it's never ending, everything that has been has already happened and could have been and will have, and every potential outcome has already been explored and experienced. That would, in the same breath, mean infinity to me. It's how I've grasped it under my DMT trips, which is why... When I grasped it in that context, it made more sense to me. If I thought about it in a logical timeline-based analysis, I would have been lost. Because there's got to be a beginning and an end, right? But if I examined it from a point of view where, okay, you have a certain point in time, everything and anything that could have happened that happened differently from your point of view... Could have happened, and probably did, in parallel universes.
Yeah, yeah.
That would explain infinity, where you're into that state where you know everything and anything that's happened at that point of time that could have went... You could have made any decision and made anything happen differently at that point of time. So what does time have to do with it? You had all the knowledge, and you could have turned it out the way you wanted to. You could have altered time yourself. That's what really throws you for a loop. And then you realize, infinity, yeah. But then when you come back to in sober 3D state of mind, it's hard to grasp that concept again.
yeah, I get that, because I used to feel like I had time travel cracked when I was under some deep thoughts.
I did too.
Yeah, I have some crazy ideas on that.
I did too. And they say we have the ability to do that within our consciousness. And that our government even spent millions of dollars researching that ability in humans.
Yep. I know. I really believe that our consciousness is like a quantum computer, and that you can connect with your consciousness in the past and the present, whether you know it's happening or not. I think that it's like...
If it's DNA-based, I could definitely believe that, because DNA
quantum
is
entanglement. Quantum entanglement proves that, you know, particles, no matter the distance, can
influence instantaneously other particles, correct?
You can move one particle and it's quantum
what's
entanglement.
What's the, here, okay, so quantum entanglement, you know the, what the hell is it called? The fractal artwork that they put up. It's a fractal artwork that explains that if you change any little, like, minute particle, even in the right-hand corner
it'll
of
change
this...
change the entire thing.
Yes, correct.
Yeah. Forgot what that's called, but yeah, I know what you're talking about. The butterfly effect?
No, it's not that. Damn it, I can't think of it. I hate that.
So what do you think about us creating and waking up an artificial intelligence? Do you think that's a great idea or a disaster?
Say artificial intelligence is the ultimate goal of the negative, quote, you know, evil alien entities that are trying to control our world from beyond.
Well, so do you think that is the singularity inevitable? Like, is a symptom of intelligence kind of technology? Are we kind of inevitably creating technology
in a 3D physical based world? Yes, technology was it was inevitable that it was going to spring up and happen to the point where it could even alter.
So, do we have free will in this? Do we have free will in this, or are we inevitably creating better and better things?
We're still the ones deciding and imagining and creating these devices that do these things.
Are we like worker bees? Are we like bees creating a god? Are we caterpillars?
The theory is we were dumbed down to be a worker bee mentality. But we do not have worker bee genes. What? But they're dumbed down. We have the genes to be able to empower ourselves and use our full potential powers, but somewhere along the way in history, in the line of time, they have been dumbed down or suppressed. Yes, that I believe.
Well, there is some sort of hive consciousness behavior that all humans have when it comes to curiosity and when it comes to discovery.
But the hive consciousness theory could actually be explained by quantum entanglement. It could be explained by quantum entanglement.
How?
Because any little thing that is thought as an intention within the consciousness affects all our consciousness around the coexisting.
But are we just caterpillars, like becoming?
Are we just being manipulated and being used as pawns?
In a sense, are we just kind of a stepping stone to something greater?
We can be used. Think about it. We can be used for that purpose, and we have in the past history. But
wait, so take yourself out of this perspective and put yourself on like. On a neutral perspective, and you're looking at Earth. We are technically, Earth is a moist ball of water floating next to a sun, right? It's in the perfect Goldilocks zone. We are basically mold growing on this moist ball, this moist rock, right? And this mold, we are basically mold growing on this rock, right? Human life and mammals and life exist. It's mold. And this mold is eventually going to be creating and turning into something that can manipulate the universe, can travel through time, can do things on a godly level, right? So are we just that beginning mold? Are we just kind of, we're sentient and we see it as this is life and reality, but are we just ants on an anthill?
There are creating something so much bigger, so much longer. There are esoteric texts that say that the early gravity and environment of our Earth was completely different, which by all anthropological standards, I could understand that. Everything in the dinosaur era was bigger. Ferns, their vascular systems, the length and size of them, everything was larger and bigger.
There's more oxygen on the planet. That's what they say, I think, why.
They esoteric texts point that the gravity was extremely different.
Mm-hmm.
That's what allowed for larger beings. That's what allowed for maybe even larger Homo sapiens to be coexisting with dinosaurs, which...
And massive meteor impacts would throw off gravity, change oxygen, CO2 levels.
Correct, which they do point to as yes.
And that's why stuff became smaller.
Absolutely. Mm-hmm. I subscribe to that theory just because the archaeological record shows it.
Yeah, makes sense.
The geological record shows it heavily and tremendously. If you look at like ferns and everything, like their vascular systems were like much larger.
Yeah, they
like,
say that giant plants.
Yeah, I mean, like they were subjected to less gravity, not as much compression as our current gravity, because gravity is compression on any like in the physics of it.
Yes. Yeah. Yeah, it makes total sense. So is this just part of life? Are there other planets? If on another planet another life form would be created, would it inevitably create some sort of spaceship or some sort of... is intelligent life is a byproduct of intelligence?
They say the first ancestors on this Earth were reptilian, that they evolved from the dinosaurs. When I read that stuff at first, I was kind of like, okay, that's way out. But there are a lot of accounts of alien abductions by reptilian aliens. There are a lot of researchers that have gone into reptilian aliens, David Icke being one of the most popular.
Yeah, David Icke's a little,
you know,
whack.
Yeah, he's a little whack, but he talks about reptilians. But
might as well be talking about Alex Jones here.
Well, these researchers, some of these researchers did not come out at the time where they were trying to make that name on their own for that reason. They were just reporting what they actually learned. And that's what leads me to believe that some of them are bullshitting and some of them are actually trying to tell the truth. That's the hardest thing about studying conspiracy theory on the internet. You have to learn how to be able to filter the bullshit from the truth.
That's hard to do, for sure.
Very hard.
I've
read volumes of materials, and I compare articles, and I read from New York Times, Post Tribune, all the different national news ones, and I compare them. I've been doing this shit for years, and it gets so tiring. I'm like, I don't care anymore. They're all just spewing out bullshit, you know?
And even
Sometimes I'll read a couple articles and I'll come across something where it's a shining gem, where somebody's actually trying to get out the truth even though they're being suppressed while they're doing it.
It's very hard to do that research too, because you never know, because it could be someone like David Icke who's written many books and who's got a big following.
Oh God!
But
yeah,
then
he's
heavy
deep
into
it. I would not be surprised if the government was paying him off to say shit. I would not be surprised.
Yeah, the guy is a little.
He's got that much influence in that area. You're like, dude, we'll just give you $1 billion. Just say this shit, okay? All right.
He's David Icke, for people who aren't listening, is the reptilian freak who believes that Justin Bieber and the president, they're all reptilians.
The queen.
Aliens.
The queen of England.
Reptile aliens.
All
that
the blue bloods.
Are ancient aliens, basically, that have lived on the planet for a long time, and they're basically shape-shifting into human form.
Shape-shifting reptilians.
Basically influencing the human race.
But reptilians do have the physiological capability of mimicry.
Yeah, but not
We can go off on imagining. But I mean, let's just suppose here.
Right, sure.
Because that a reptilian species that evolved on this planet had the ability for mimicry. I mean, really, if they could pull it off, I mean, that's not hard for me to imagine. And that's where I think people get thrown off, like, "Oh, you're crazy." No, you know what? Stranger things have happened on this Earth.
True.
And I think that it might be a possibility. Do I think there's an abundance of them now? No. You know, but I think there have been, there are remote little locations and populations that have just been, randomly exposed and, viewed by, our society, our civilization. And that's what leads me to believe that, there are things and mysteries about this Earth and we haven't even explored yet or know yet. And that's what leads me to believe about, I think that can myth be half imagination, half truth? Yeah, I believe so. Just like conspiracy theory, it can be half imagination, half truth.
Yeah. Or he could just be a little schizophrenic.
Yeah.
And he may never know.
Yeah, right, right.
You know, schizophrenic people have small traces of DMT in their pee.
Really?
Yeah.
Where? What researcher?
I learned that in psychology.
Really?
Yeah.
Who studied that, though? Do you know?
I'm not sure, but that can explain.
I'm going to look that up tomorrow.
That could explain.
That's a subject for me. I'm going to look that up tomorrow.
Yeah.
I trust you, dude.
That could explain a lot of the delusions.
I
want to
know that one. I want to know. No, well, dude, Terrence McKenna actually ascribed to that tremendously. Psychedelics do put you into a more insane-like, schizophrenic-like state of mind by psychology definitions.
Yeah, yeah.
Okay. Yes, it does. I'm not going to deny that because it does. By psychology definitions, mind you. Okay.
That's definitely true, though.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah.
Now, would it make you go and hatchet up your old family? No, I'm not going to say that.
But
do they want to pose it as it might? Yes, they do. That's why they put your ass in a feather room if they know you're on it and all that.
Mm-hmm.
Well, I understand that.
I think if you were going to do that, if that was in your plans
if
before,
that was in your intention and your mind and you were on psychedelics, yes.
Maybe,
I definitely see somebody pulling that off.
Mm-hmm.
Hell yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yes, hallelujah, I can see that happen. But, if this person, somebody got subjected to, something and they knew it was a loving force and something not to be reckoned with and they weren't quite aware of what was going on and they weren't reacting in the normal state of mode of mind, and other people viewed him that way. Do I think other people might get nervous because of that person's behavior? Yes, absolutely. I think they would get nervous. Now, if I was on psychedelic drugs at the same time and I can like gauge and view and sense this person's emotions and feelings, and I knew he wasn't going to do anything evil, and I could have faith in him not to do something evil, mm-hmm. yes, I believe that's entirely possible too. Mm-hmm. And I think that's where the fear and the truth come into play. Mm-hmm. Fear of the unknown, the truth being out there as you access it.
Of course, and fear of the unknown is common with our species, period.
And it's expounded upon...
Because we're curious.
And it's purportedly expounded upon by these alien, evil alien entities that are trying to control our secret government and trying to control our culture.
Like the interdimensional
of psychic vampires and everything that David Icke likes to talk about and all that.
Like the interdimensional
child molesters. I believe these things
Jones talks about.
There's a yin and a yang, and I believe these beings and entities probably do exist. I absolutely do 100% believe that they do exist. Do I think they have as much of an influence on our planet as people want to purport they do? No. Do I think they had it in the past? Yes. Do I think that we are ascending and becoming a better civilization as far as the conduct, behavior, and things of that nature? Yes, I do, but with some warning signs. We have nuclear fuel that's burning holes in our soil that we have to, like, you know, we can't, like, you know, people can't be within 1,000 miles of because, like, it contaminate them and shit like that. Like, we got shit like that going on right now that we didn't have going on in ancient history. But in ancient history, we had a lot of torture, slavery, rape, and all that shit that caused human emotions. And if human emotions have power, then imagine all that negative emotion and everything that was feeding these psychic vampires and aliens that were causing all these wars and things like that in the history to feed off of that and gain power.
Maybe.
Do I believe astrally that was going on? Yes. Yes, because it would point to a lot of different shit. If you look at the peak and declines of certain historical wars and civilizations.
Or maybe that's how early man described their consciousness. Maybe that's how they described that evil
part of
them.
But then their consciousness goes in certain crusts. But then their consciousness...
And maybe a lot of them had some dissociative identity disorder. Maybe a lot of them were fucking, like, multiple personality schizophrenics. This is another thing that I think of, too. Like, think about our history of humans and where we came from. Like, we come from savage... We come from the winners of the wars. Of all the savage wars, we are the ancestors of all the savage people who survived the crazy harsh weather, the crazy harsh raping and wars and environment that you talk about, illnesses and diseases... We are the savage ancestors of these crazy people who survived, okay? On top of it, the Americans, if you're American, the people who came here from Europe, who came here on boat, when Columbus, you know, got his Mayflower, when he got all of his boats and all the early explorers, they weren't sending him, like, fucking the top-notch people society. They gave him prisoners to bring over here when the Mayflower and the fucking Santa Maria. They gave them... You know, prisoners and unwanted people of society to bring with to start to re. If you make it, you make it. There you go. You get freedom. You start over. That's who created America, on top of who created them.
And the Puritans, the Quakers.
Yeah, all of it. What about the Puritans, the Crusades,
the
Christian
Amish.
Crusades? Dude, everything though.
They emigrated here around that time. They just didn't fight in our wars or get involved in our politics.
You come from like a savage, you know, psychopathic, you know, behavior background.
I think any human civilization or human village is capable of anything depending on the environment in which they are raised. And this is a big demonstrator of that is the Amish community. If you look at the Amish community in America, they're the most peaceful society.
They're a cult. They're not peaceful, though. They're peaceful to maybe... They're peaceful because
they're subservient.
Cut off. They're peaceful because they're kind
of
cut off.
Of their religion.
So. Yeah, but like...
That doesn't... I'm not saying that they're on a high pedestal because of that. I'm saying that it shows the power that if you subject a person's consciousness of that village to one intention and one mind, that it can be utopia. Even if it's in their own paradigm that you may not agree with, it's still a utopia.
If they all have...
There's always going to be outsiders, going to be outcasts. But is the stuff that the Amish... What do they really protest against? Americanization? Modernism? electricity, stuff like that. They want to live off the land. They want to live naturally. And all esoteric texts say that that is the healthiest way to live. So where are the Amish really off in that belief and in that way of living? They're really not. They're actually smarter than we are in a certain degree. Maybe not in every aspect, but as far as living off the land aspect, they got us nailed. They got us licked.
I think, though, that Amish is...
Everything's 100% organic. Natural,
I think that Amish culture, though, is dying.
100% organic, natural, off the land, which all hipsters and hippies want to subscribe to now. Is that a coincidence? That's my point.
No, but you know what? Like, when they're 18 or something, or 21, they're allowed to go out and experience the world.
They are given
a
grief, yes.
Yeah, and they're
yes,
allowed...
they are.
And I'm pretty sure there's a high percentage that never go back to their culture.
There is.
And I
there
think
is.
It's dying.
I don't blame them. I don't...
It,
okay,
they're realizing it's
just
kind
being
of bullshit.
Grown
it's a
up,
cult.
Just being grown up in our culture now, I don't blame those kids
they
because
can
America can be a lot more fun than living in an Amish land. I'm not. Yeah, let's get down to brass tacks here.
Yeah.
It can be a lot more fun to live in the American land than an Amish farm. I will totally 100% wholeheartedly subscribe to that.
But you got to have a balanced life. You got to
yeah,
do things
well,
you enjoy.
Exactly.
You got to do things you enjoy,
and they are very strict and cult-like.
Mm-hmm. But do you get if people?
But I guess I admire them for their purity in certain areas where it does matter.
Yeah, people who wish for a life like that,
yeah,
hate their life. What they're doing, they're not living a life that they want to live. You know, people who long for a life living in a field like an Amish person, who can get out of this culture and go do that, they're probably just not living a good life in this culture. But you probably could. You could find something that fits.
Yes.
You know, you could still, for fuck's sake, still use
yes.
a toilet. You could still use some running water and a light bulb. That ain't going to be crazy. Like,
yes.
you don't need to sleep with bugs. You know what I'm saying? You could have AC year-round if you needed it, if you wanted it. Like,
you know,
don't have to live like a
You know another thing that's very strange? And this may not be reported. It may be hidden up, so it might not have any credence, but Amish have a very low, like... mental history rate, things of that nature.
Like mental health?
Mm-hmm.
Really?
Hmm. Yeah.
Probably because there's not much to be stressed out about.
Yeah. I mean, it just as, like, they knew, like, the human, they knew the lines that you couldn't cross with human limits.
Because it was a cult.
They wanted to live off the land and subscribe
taught.
To that. Do I believe they're cult-like in the way that they follow the Bible? Yes. But they're not... you know what? I'll tell you what. I used to study with
the
Jehovah's
society.
Witnesses, and the Jehovah's Witnesses are not far from the Amish.
I mean...
They shun people just like Amish do.
Yeah, they're all cults. Jehovah's Witnesses, they're all cults.
Well, I think that when you take it to that level, you are cult-like. I never agreed with the religion of the Amish, but I agree with their way of life because they live off the land organically. That's where I think I subscribe to their love of nature and nature can take care of them.
Mm-hmm.
That I do am highly covenant of
mm-hmm.
about the Amish. Yes, I will agree with that and admit to that. But not their religion, no. I will not subscribe to the religion as strictly and wholeheartedly as they do because I believe that shunning people is not the... It's not the tone that the New Testament wants to preach.
Yeah.
Forgiveness.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, true. Because forgiveness...
Now, they claim that they'll accept forgiveness, but they can't have... If they continue to do it even after they're forgiven, then they can't personally experience life with that person, so they shun them. Okay, they want to keep their purity, and that's their argument. Okay, you know, fine. But... doesn't mean I have to agree with that about them.
Yeah, I agree.
No, I'm not saying I agree. I respect the Amish because since the 1700s, they never tried to take on any modern conventions, and they've lived and survived. And that's a tough integrity that you have to take notice of and respect.
Very true. That is. It's definitely tough.
That's what I think I admire them the most about them. Even though I think they're cult-like and all that, I think that's just something that they should be proud of and hold their head up high about.
Yeah.
Do you
agree
with me?
I definitely could agree with that. It is something to be proud of that they can keep that in a society
that
we live in now.
Yeah. Why you that? I'm like, dude, you're looking at the surface exterior vanity shit. Like, I'm looking at the hardcore, like, down to the bones
that,
person
that
they
that
are.
Part is, Yeah, that I could agree.
You know what
that.
I'm saying?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and I always try to look at every person and culture that in that way.
Yeah,
and that's what really gets me into the enlightenment.
Mm-hmm.
Is that I can look at it from that respect.
Yeah,
you dig that, right?
Yeah, I do. That's a good way to put it. That's a really good way to put it. All right. It is 10 o'clock, so I think I'm gonna have to get ready to go here. So. I think we're going to have to call it here now, and then...
And are you going to have me on your show again?
Yeah, definitely. We're going to...
Oh, yeah! Come on, man. Give me some love. All right, let's do it. And I'm sorry. This is my first podcast, people. I'm sorry if I was a little nervous.
Oh, no. We had a great podcast. Thank you for coming out, dude. I really appreciate it.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, it was nice to meet you, too, man. We'll have many more, for sure.
For sure.
Thanks for listening, everyone.